Ladies and gentlemen, we are now beginning the conference call. If you get disconnected during the call, please call 1-888-409-6709. Again, the number to get reconnected is 1-888-409-6709. At this time, your line is muted and will continue to remain muted during the duration of the call. To ask a question or if you have a comment, please press star 1. If at any time during the conference you need assistance, please press star 0. I would now like to introduce Dr. Joanne Carter, Executive Director of Results, Inc., located in Washington, D.C., to open the call.
Thanks a lot, operator, and welcome everyone to the Results March 2014 National Conference Call that's focused on domestic U.S. poverty. It's great to be with all of you, and a special welcome for those of you who are on the call for the first time, and also to our very special guests from Circles. I'm actually calling in from Amsterdam. I'm on my way back from a major meeting on AIDS and tuberculosis in Indonesia, so I'm really glad that I can be with you. And just a reminder for those of you that haven't accessed them already, there's a set of slides that track this call, and you can access those through the results homepage, right on the front page in the Take Action section. So if you want to follow along with the slides. So first, I just am excited. I want to let you know that a few weeks ago, the Results and Results Educational Fund Board of Directors met in person in Washington, and we spent a significant amount of time actually talking about our U.S. poverty campaigns and approved our campaigns for 2014. And Meredith is going to say more about it in a moment on the details of our 2014 work. But what I do want to share is that the board was extremely enthusiastic about our strategy, and I want to say why, several reasons that we really were excited about what we are setting up for 2014, but also really beyond 2014 as well. And first, that it's really a comprehensive strategy on building ladders out of poverty that includes ensuring that people can earn what they need to make ends meet, that they can stay on their feet, and that they can hold on to benefits as they move out of poverty, and that they can save for the future. So again, you'll hear more how the specific work that we'll be doing this year and next year will fit into that, everything from the earned income tax credit that you've worked on to some really exciting strategies that you'll hear more about later in the call on innovative ways to support people to build assets, to actually encourage them folks to save and give them an incentive and a bonus for saving, and also work to really look at how we can ensure that people can hold on to benefits and that as they make a little bit more money, they don't, what we call the cliff effect, they don't fall off a cliff of their benefits suddenly disappearing when they're just making a slightly increased amount of money, so that there's actually incentives and not disincentives for people in those areas. So it's a comprehensive campaign, but also in addition to being comprehensive, I feel like what we really said we were looking for is a campaign that's proactive and aspirational, because we talked a lot this past year about how incredibly important it has been for us to fight the defensive fight we had to fight on SNAP. But we also agreed that we have to move from a kind of defensive posture to actually creating a bigger vision and a strategy that lays out where we want to go and that kind of pulls folks forward and that changes in some ways the discussion and the dynamic so that we're no longer having to play so much of that defensive game and that we're actually taking ground in the fight on poverty. So a big piece of this is also that this be a proactive, aspirational strategy. And I would also say that this campaign is an important opportunity for Results to play an even bigger leadership role, partly, again, in helping bring that bigger picture to the anti-poverty community and working together with others, but also because there will be opportunities where I think we can not only play a really key role in supporting legislation, but even actually a key role in investigating, designing, and potentially even launching legislation. And a particular piece that we're going to be looking at and kind of exploring is this whole issue of the cliff effect. So I think that will be a very exciting role for us and for our domestic campaigns to grow in. And I would also say that our campaigns for 2014 really build on our organizational strengths. And by organizational strengths, I really mean you guys, which is the unique strength that we bring to the whole advocacy ecosystem, if you want to call it that, to the whole advocacy community. What we bring with a sophisticated network of advocates that can understand complex issues like tax policy and talk about those issues with policymakers, folks that engage regularly with policymakers in a powerful way, and also with the media. It's a really key piece of the work that needs to be done on all of these issues, and it's a really key role that we play. The last thing I want to say, and kind of linking to our speakers today in particular, that in the context of our 2014 campaigns, over the years, one of the most important lessons that I think we've learned and that we've seen played out so powerfully is the power and impact of people telling their own stories, really the profound influence that this can have on policymakers and on the media, whether that's a Head Start parent talking about what the program means for them and their kids, or one of our allies from Africa talking about what it means to get access to treatment for AIDS. It's both the way that those stories make these issues real, but also how they so powerfully can dispel myths as well that exist around these issues. And we're particularly committed to incorporating this focus of bringing forward the voices and experiences of people living in poverty in our 2014 campaigns, really around making these issues real, but also informing the substance of what we're doing and understanding what people's needs really are. It was really from our conversations with Circles, folks that you'll hear from shortly, that it really raised the issue much more definitively for us around the issue of the cliff effect and the impact that the way that benefits can drop off can have such profoundly negative impacts for people living out of poverty and trying to move out of poverty. So that's already had huge benefit for our work. And in a short while later in the call, you're going to hear from two amazing people, the founder of Circles, Scott Miller, and Circles leader, Lene Havens, who I was really had the privilege of meeting when we were actually speaking together at the fundraiser that the Santa Fe Results folks did a really fabulous job last fall. And it was really a very inspiring time for me to be on that program with Lene. She was really one of the most powerful speakers I've been with. And as I said to Meredith and others, her description not only of the reality of poverty, but also the power of advocacy, and even specifically the impact of the Results International Conference is some of the most powerful descriptions I've really ever heard about our work. So I know you're going to get a lot of hearing from Lene later in the call. On our call today, essentially you're going to get a chance to hear from our speakers. Meredith will lay out broadly some more details of our 2014 campaign. And then you'll hear from Joss Lynn around very specific actions that we can be taking this month and some other updates. We'll have a chance to do a powerful speaking exercise to help you prepare for the take the March action. And then you'll hear from some of your grassroots colleagues and some of the work that they're doing and some of the lessons learned there. And then we'll have some announcements. And so it's going to be a great call. We're really excited about the partnership that we're building with Circles. And before I turn this over to Meredith Dodson, I also just want to say that I really, really hope that we see many, if not all of you, at the Results Conference this year on June 21st to 24th. We really need your voices, and it's going to be an amazing conference. So I hope to see you there. And now I'll turn the call over to our Director of Domestic Campaigns, Meredith Dodson.
Great. Thank you, Joanne, and hello, everyone. Greetings from Washington, D.C. So I want to start off with a quick overview of I just want to provide context before we go to our guest speakers. So as Joanne mentioned, our overall campaign focus is now official, and it's creating economic mobility, building ladders out of poverty, and it's within the broader framework of ending poverty both here and around the world by 2030. So starting with our March action, which we'll spend a lot more time reviewing later, we will advocate for specific policies that support low-income families to build for the future through innovative asset-building strategies, including and focused on the financial security credit. But we'll also, throughout the year, be voicing our support that people earn enough to meet basic needs and be addressing the cliff effect in conversations, too. So I just want to flag that this campaign takes a longer view. So, for example, the financial security credit, the focus of our action this month, really the vehicle for that is tax reform. So as a piece of legislation on its own, it's not going to pass. But if we can generate enough momentum behind the financial security credit or other asset building policies, they could be embedded in broader tax reform legislation. But just to flag, tax reform is definitely not taking place this year, maybe next year or after the 2016 presidential election. And that's also more or less true for probably tax credits and the cliff effect. And of course, if there are opportunities and there's some bipartisan momentum on expanding the EITC, if we have opportunities to advance them this year, we'll certainly take them. It gives us the overall, then, we're going to be building a foundation of support for these ideas, so when the opportunity to act arises, we'll be ready to take advantage of it. So the first half of 2014, and certainly in the next few months, we'll focus on the financial security credit. Meanwhile, kind of behind the scenes, we'll be working with key leaders on Capitol Hill to assess cliff effect legislation, including, you know, perhaps some of the dangers of moving forward with legislation and its chances of moving forward. So I do want to flag, just for the sake of planning, after this call in April, we're going to focus on outreach, and we plan to make the April National Conference call, or an event in April in case it's not on the typical conference call date. As of right now, it is a national outreach event similar to the one we did with Barbara Ehrenreich back in November of 2012. We're working on getting a well-known speaker for the call to help you in inviting new people to get involved, and we'll have more information about that in the coming weeks. So the one other thing to sketch out with our campaigns what another critical moment is having the biggest and best results international conference ever, that conference coming up in June. So we have a wonderful array of speakers lined up, including Marion Wright Edelman, the founder of the Children's Defense Fund, Jim Kim, the head of the World Bank, Shireen McGee, who's one of the witnesses to hunger, and Lene is also going to be one of our guest speakers this summer at our conference. And as of last night, we also just confirmed Michael Blake, former high up in the Obama administration and also a senior advisor to Operation Hope, to be on our in our conference. So I will say that the session we had last year featuring the Witnesses to Hunger and one of the other Circles leaders was considered by many the best session we've ever had at a results conference. But what we need is you and new people you know to attend the conference in order to reach this goal and really use the summer to build momentum to end poverty through creating economic mobility. So as the existing volunteers listening to my voice, we need your expertise and experience at the conference, and we also need new volunteers bringing their fresh take on things to the conference. We need the energy and enthusiasm of young people in particular, so we have a Real Change Fellowship open to 18 to 28-year-old young leaders who are already involved in results or are willing to get trained on how to do that. So please, I urge you to register for the conference for the next month. It's only $165 to register, and bring other folks with you. So that's my quick plug for our conference this summer before we introduce our speakers. So really thrilled to have both Scott and Lene on the call from Circles. So let me introduce both of them, quickly review their biographies, and then we'll go through a Q&A session. So Scott Miller began his focus on poverty in the late 1970s. As a volunteer for the Catholic Worker in Rochester, New York. Since then, he's initiated projects in North America that directly help families and communities address poverty more effectively. After a decade of experimenting with different approaches, Scott founded Circles. He makes his home in Albuquerque, New Mexico, with his wife, Jan, and both have volunteered for years as allies to families enrolled in Circles. Scott's the author of a book, Until It's Gone, Ending Poverty in Our Nation in Our Lifetime. And then Lene Havens was born in Las Vegas, New Mexico, in 1975. And when she was a child, she lived in Grants, New Mexico, and Milan, New Mexico, though one can imagine perhaps Milan, Italy, which is what I first thought when I saw that in her bio. Well, her dad worked in the uranium mines. And then she's been in Albuquerque starting when their dad started a solar business. She's a single mother of a 10-year-old and a college student studying social work. She also serves as a coaching intern with Circles New Mexico, and as a volunteer with the Results Albuquerque chapter of through results, she met with Michelle Lujan Grisham in 2013. She'll talk more about that. And as I think many folks know, Representative Lujan Grisham used Linnea's story on the floor of the House of Representatives to argue against cuts to SNAP. So with that, let's start with you, Scott. Can you give us a description of CIRCLES so folks have the context for this conversation?
Sure. First, thank you, Meredith, and thank you, Joanne, for those opening comments. And also thanks to our Albuquerque team with results. We've just had a great experience in the last, I don't know how long it's been now, maybe a year and a half, with the results team providing us with a lot of information about how to make presentations, meet people that can make system changes. So this is really great. Thanks, everyone, for this opportunity. We, CIRCLES, the main thing with CIRCLES is to build relationships, preferably with people who are trying to make their way to economic stability, and also with people from middle and upper income backgrounds that can provide networking and coaching and support and information that people need in order to end up making more money than they're spending and having some for the future. The model has evolved over the years. My work in the 70s was primarily with the homeless shelter work and as a volunteer, and I was never invited to build any relationships with anybody. I was simply there to give food and to listen. And then in the 80s, the work I did was in the emergency assistance field. And again, we were just listening for a longer period of time, 35, 40 minutes, providing some financial assistance. But there was no way to refer anybody to something that would help them get stabilized. That's when we began looking at work that was being done called family development in Iowa. And that work we helped spread around the country through a relationship with the Casey Foundation and some others. In the 90s, the work became more community building, starting with families who in CIRCLES now they meet every week. There's food and child care and child development available so people can focus on plans. There's a 12-week class we've developed now, and the class focuses on some basic skills that are then reinforced over the ensuing months and years that people want to participate in CIRCLES. The skill building that we provide is around establishing a budget. How much do you really need to make every month so that you have enough to pay the bills and then set some aside for the future? And how are you going to make that? What will it take to do that? How long would that take? What kind of support will you need? How do you build a relationship with someone across income lines that's effective and supportive? How do you support each other? And also, what can you do to give back to the community? Because your experience with these struggles is something that people from middle and upper income orientations haven't had or don't have right now. And so there's a missing urgency and there's a missing clarity in our overall planning around the country about programs that are, and that's why we have the cliff effects. They were designed by people other than those trying to get out of these conditions of poverty. So CIRCLES basically does leadership work, which is why the presentations that Sandy, for example, talks on with the EPIC approach were so valuable to our group because they could tell their story quickly and effectively after practicing that. And we were able to have a nice win here in Albuquerque around affordable housing. So the CIRCLES does two things. It supports people to get out of poverty through peer support and through building some relationships across income lines. People are assigned, they get into matches, so there's usually two allies, as we call them, with one CIRCLE leader who's trying to get out of poverty. And then the second part of this is called the big view, which is dealing with the systemic issues that are in the way, these barriers like the cliff effects that stand in the way of people getting where they need to get to. We have 70 of these up and running across the country in 24 different states and up in parts of Canada. And we received a video a while back from South Africa saying they had just simply downloaded whatever they could out of the book and the website and created their own program and then sent us a really nice video after 3 years of doing it. So it's something that isn't rocket science, but it does take quite a bit of attention to do it well. And we have a pretty rigorous immersion training that we run staff through before they start circles, and there's a lot of readiness that communities go through before they invite people into the process. So I think Lene could probably describe circles from her experience even better than that provided.
Well, I think that's really helpful, though, for folks to have that overview. And of course, there's a link to Circle's website and our PowerPoint. And I hope folks will check out Circle's and look at where you might have overlap. We'll be reaching out to you about that too. So I want to turn now to Lene. Lene, could you tell us a bit about how your story and how you got connected to Circles and to Results?
Sure, I'd be more than happy to. Thank you. And I just wanted to also thank Joanne and Meredith and Joss and pretty much everyone in Results for allowing me and having me do this today. I feel very honored. So what I'm going to start with my situation, say, about 3 years ago. I was married, a part-time working mother. I was working maybe 23 to 24 hours per week. I didn't qualify for any real benefits or health insurance or anything of that sort. But that was okay. You know, my husband was the one who carried our insurance. I was making about $8.25 an hour. It wasn't a lot, but it definitely made a difference in our lives. And then I woke up one morning and found myself as a single mother of a 7-year-old son. And I was scared. I was truly scared. I was in the middle of my living room floor, seriously screaming and crying and asking for the strength to be able to keep my son protected and safe from whatever was just about to happen to us. I had one foot out the door to homelessness. And just to sort of help you understand here, it was the beginning of October. I was about 2 months behind on everything. I was trying to figure out, you know, what I could go longest without until my next paycheck. Should it be electricity or gas? And since my home was mostly run on gas, I decided electricity would be what we could manage without the easiest. You know, we needed to be able to have dinner and have warm showers and the heater. And then all of a sudden it hit me. How would my son do his homework? How would we still be able to read a bedtime book, brush our teeth, take a shower, everything that, you know, you need lights to do? And that was scary. That was a really scary, scary place for me. Put me into this, you know, what I refer to as the twisty, turny, bumpy fall into the system of welfare. And I found out how that truly worked, and wow, that was even more of a scary place, to be honest. But in my search for resources, I found out that, you know, there's places that will help with utility bills and so on. And so I reached out to St. Vincent's de Paul, who in turn referred me into the Circles program. And I can say for me, you know, Circles for me personally provided me the knowledge to get out of poverty. As Scott was saying, you know, I was matched with allies, as we refer to them, in a circle. And so, you know, you work on your personal goals with the support of your allies. And there are people that you can call and count on, and they provide you with the knowledge that most people in a low-income environment would have very little access, if any at all, to. So I always like to say that for me, you know, Circles took me out of that isolation, I feel, when you're living and you're just trying to keep your head above water and your foot in the door at the exact same time. When I started Circles, I was living from week to week and sometimes day to day. I was not able to keep my head above water at all. However, you know, since graduating from the Circles program, I have moved into a safer neighborhood where my son is able to sleep in his own bed, his own room, because he's no longer afraid of the night noises from all our neighbors, you know, the people on drugs who like to randomly yell at all hours of the day and night, and cars racing up and down the street, and also really very regular gunshots. For the first time, he's able to go outside and ride a bike and play basketball with all the other neighborhood kids. He doesn't have to live behind a locked gate or be kept inside for safety. I also have reliable transportation, And I'm fortunate enough, I have a job that pays me enough to be a mother and a student. And I don't have to make such tough decisions on whether, you know, to pay my gas or electric. I always say I was one of the luckiest ones in the circle group. I was matched with the best allies anyone could have ever hoped for. And then I also got lucky again when a results member, Roxanne Allen, met with a Circles ally, Dee Ivy, at a farmer's market. And that was the start of the Circles results partnership in Albuquerque. Sandra Duker, or Sandy as I affectionately call her, started to come once a month to teach our whole big Circles group about the results epic laser talk. And I always say I knew she had mad skills when she was able to help another Circle leader, who's a bit wordy, prepare for a speech to give in front of the City Planning Commission in Albuquerque. And it was a speech that brought people to tears. So, you know, epic, that's for sure. That's for sure. You know, I can say that I feel Circles gave me the knowledge to get out of poverty, and results gave me the voice out of poverty. And not only a voice, but a voice I didn't even know I had. And for that, I will forever be grateful.
And if folks can hear, I'm taking fast and furious notes. Need the voice to get out of poverty. Sorry about the delay there. I just wanted to make sure I got that. So I'm wondering if both of you could talk a little bit, and I'll put two questions together. Anything you want to say about why you think results in circles, like why this collaboration makes sense, and also any best practices you would share to empower people to tell their own stories? So you could address one or both of those questions.
Lynnae, you want to go first?
Sure. I'll go first. I think I can best describe why results and circles work together makes sense to you by telling you what happened to me last summer. By some amazing power, I don't know. I was chosen for a scholarship to the results conference in D.C. this past July. When I was chosen, I was really excited, but at the same time, I was really scared. Although I was in a safer place in my life, you know, I wasn't asking myself what utilities I was going without. I was asking questions like, you know, so do I buy dish soap or toothpaste? These are smaller things, but important nonetheless. I had no clothes that I felt were appropriate to wear to such an occasion. I had one pair of mostly decent shoes. And even if I had the clothes and the shoes, I had no suitcase to put any of this stuff in anyway. I felt very ashamed. And I had to say that although I would love to accept a scholarship and go to this conference, that I would not feel comfortable going. And I explained why to the people closest to me. But I can tell you in turn, people invited me over to their closets and allowed me to pick and borrow whatever I wanted. I also got a suitcase to carry it all in. And so when I got to D.C., you know, just to show you a little bit how this went for me, Roxanne Allen saw the situation I was in and also let me wear a pair of shoes that she brought for herself. And it all just made me feel a little more like I belonged. With the gift of the local results group scholarship, I was given this newfound hope and the courage to use my voice and believe in myself. That conference gave me the excitement and the knowledge to set out for Capitol Hill. And our New Mexico group sat down in our representative's office one by one all day and talked about all the things that were important to us. And for me at the time, it was the cuts to the SNAP program. And I'll never, ever forget when we were sitting in Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham's office and Sandy looked over at me and she said, "You'll do fine. Just tell your story and you know the rest will happen." A couple months later, when Congress was about to go onto the floor and debate the SNAP cuts, as you've heard a little bit, Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham's press secretary contacted me and asked if I would be willing to send to the office some of my story so that it could be used on the floor for debate. And just to show you or share with you more so how naive I was and still am about politics, I had no idea what the congressional record was. I had no idea what a representative really did or who they even were. And now to have them know me and be in congressional record, I still can't wrap my head around that sometimes. You know, that day in Representative Michelle Lujan Grisham's office when Sandy looked over me, and said, just tell your story. I leaned into her shoulder and I whispered, I can't wait until this is not my story. As far as it mixing together, it's you know, I'm extremely grateful to have been able to sit among each and every person at that conference. I met some wonderful people there, and it will always be one of my greatest memories. It was life-changing. And when I stop and I look back at the past 2 years, I still can't believe I was there at the bottom of hopelessness. And I truly would never be able to thank Results and Circles enough for giving me a better story to tell and the ability to help the next person.
So, Lene, you know you're not alone in not understanding the congressional record. Right. Probably half of the Americans don't understand what that is. But, you know, that's, I think, part of the problem is that we don't have an active enough citizenry about what's going on. And to have one-third of our population struggling like crazy financially, it's just, I think we both agree, mission-wise, that we need to end poverty in this country and that it's actually doable. We have enormous resources. And when we build these relationships across income lines, and if our allies can learn how to become better advocates, stronger advocates, as well as our circle leaders really learning how to step together into this advocacy role, that's what's going to change the country. There has to be this mindset shift that says it's intolerable. It needs to be the same sort of abolitionist movement that we had many, many years ago, that we just have to have that same sort of urgency about poverty. And I think that both of our organizations have that. And we also got sort of the complementary pieces here, I think, that can bring the stories and the support system to the nuts and bolts of creating systemic change.
That's great. Thanks, both of you. I think I'm going to go, if both of you have just 1 or 2 minutes, maybe we'll go to one question or quick comment from the audience before we wrap up this section. This is really helpful as overview of circles and for us to be thinking about not only with circles and circles leaders, but also other networks of low-income folks and how we can work to really empower folks to share their expertise. So do you have a question or a comment? I think it's star one, right, Jamie?
Yes, ma'am, star one.
Okay.
And your first question is from Minneapolis.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Paul. Just a comment about the fact that it came from a chance meeting, or it sounds like a chance meeting at a farmer's market, in which someone from Results shared with someone from Circles about the possibility of creating the kind of shift that Scott is talking about that could actually end poverty and the kind of stories that Lene and the rest of the people around us have to talk about can make that difference. So it may have seemed like a chance meeting, but I think Lene would probably say that it was something more than chance.
Great. Anything, Scott or Lene, you'd want to comment on with that, or anything you want to say before we close out this first part of our conversation?
Well, I do want to say that I think we are at a time right now where there's a building momentum around this intolerance for the conditions of poverty. It's never been in the news the way it is right now. The 50-year mark on the war on poverty has brought even more attention to all this, but I also think that there's just sort of a you alluded to this, Paul, I think, but there's a spiritual awakening happening in the country that includes social justice at a new level. And I think if we really take a look at what would create a tipping point in our belief system about poverty, to move it from, you know, we have to sort of bear it to we can and we should resolve poverty. If we can make that shift, when we make it, this country is going to be completely different. And I think it's I think if we do that, it changes a whole bunch of other social issues that everyone's struggling with, from education to, you name it, better business. So I really look forward to seeing what unfolds here. And I thank everybody for all the volunteer work you've been doing all these years to get to this point of readiness for this country's emergence out of poverty.
Anything you want to add, Lene, before we close out?
Oh, no, not necessarily, Paul, but I would, you know, for whatever it was, whatever it is, I am definitely grateful and thankful, most definitely, always will be.
Great. Thanks, and thank you, everyone, for including all the great work that our entire Albuquerque and Santa Fe folks have done in building the relationship, and we're really excited about, you know, building on that, connecting more of us with Circle's leaders and really forging a more formal partnership that's really going to make a huge difference. So thank you, everyone. And with that, we're going to go over to Joss for to review our action for the month.
Thanks, Meredith. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Good afternoon, folks. It's Joss Lynn, grassroots manager for our U.S. Poverty Campaign. Well, that was a hard act to follow, but let's quickly turn to our legislative actions to help us kind of implement these goals that we're talking about. So first I want to say thank you and congratulations to all of you who submitted op-eds and letters to the editor to your papers over the last month. As you can see on slide number 10, as a result of your hard work, we've had 8 op-eds and 2 letters to the editor published so far based on the February action. And more may be coming because we know that some folks are still submitting their pieces in as we speak, and some still have them outstanding. So it's not too late. If you haven't sent in your op-ed or letter to the editor, it's not too late to do that. And actually, we have some new hooks that you can use to try to get the attention of editors. If you look on slides 11 and 12, you can see there's some new things in the news over the last week that can help. Paul Ryan released a report about the war on poverty that's already having holes poked into it, so that could be a good hook, as well as Representative Camp report released a tax plan last week or the week before last, and it makes big changes to the earned income tax credit. That's another way that you could really bring up these issues and talk about strengthening supports for low-income folks. And then, as you see on slide 12, President Obama released his budget this week, which calls for new investments in anti-poverty programs, like expanding the earned income tax credit for workers without children and allowing a larger age range of folks to claim it. The estimates are that 13.5 million people would benefit from his change, and 500,000 people would be lifted out of poverty. It also calls for new investments in Head Start and early Head Start in child care. So, again, these are all very good hooks that you could use for writing a new op-ed or a letter to the editor over the next couple of weeks. So be sure to, if you haven't done it yet, be sure to use those. And as always, you can contact me or our Deputy Communications Director, Colin Smith, for any help that you need in drafting, editing, or submitting your piece. So now, going on to slide 13, let's start talking about the March action. And as Meredith and Joanne talked about, you know, this month we're focusing on helping low-income individuals and families build savings and assets, which is an integral part of our effort to end poverty. You know, it's not enough for people to lift themselves out of poverty one day and then risk falling back in the next. And too many Americans right now are falling into this boat. As you can see, you know, the Corporation for Enterprise Development reports that 44% of American households are asset poor. That means that if they lost their income, they wouldn't have enough savings to live out of poverty for more than 3 months. So this is a crisis that we need to do something about. So to help kind of steer this and rectify this, we support the financial security credit. And so here's how it works. We've talked about this before. You know, typically, low-income Americans get their largest checks of the year during this time, during tax time each year, because of the earned income tax credit and child tax credit. So what the FSC uses is this opportune moment to encourage people to save. So folks could check a box on their tax return saying that they want to deposit all or part of their refund into an existing account, or they could create one right there on the tax return. And if they maintain that deposit for at least 8 months, they would get a 50% match. So you put in $1,000, wait 8 months, and you get an extra $500. And a similar program called Save USA, it started in New York City and then expanded out, has shown that this actually can work. So now, the financial security credit alone is not going to end poverty in America, but think of what an extra $200 or $500 or $2,000 in the bank could do for low-income families. It means they can get the car fixed or pay the rent or save a little for their child's education. But it also means that the mind – sorry about that call coming in. They have the peace of mind knowing that if the rug gets pulled out from underneath them, there's something there to cushion the fall. So this month, let's take action. We want you to write letters to your senators and representatives urging them to support the policies that help low-income Americans build savings nets. Tell them about the financial security credit and urge them to talk to tax leaders about including it. Our goal is to get enough support for the credit that when the Congress takes up tax reform, they'll include the FSB as part of it. So to help build that momentum, in addition to your tax, talking to your tax leaders, be sure to ask your representative to co-sponsor H.R. 2917, which is the Financial Security Credit Act. There's no companion bill in the Senate right now, but we hope one will be introduced in the next couple of months. The March action has all the talking points and background information that you need, and you can also see those in the conference call slides as well. So to help us learn more about talking about the financial security credit, let's do our speaking training of this month. And I'm very pleased to have Anita Lee from San Fernando Valley to lead the training for us this month. Anita, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you hear me? Hi, this is Anita Lee. I'm from the San Fernando Valley Results Group, and I'm really happy to lead our speaking training this month. Thanks for asking me, Joss. I appreciate it. Honored. This month, we're going to return to an oldie but goodie exercise. It's the fill-in-the-blank laser talk. This exercise will help you learn more effectively to speak about the financial security credit, and here's how it will work. I will read through the laser talk a few times, and I'll change it up a bit each time to help you learn it. At the end, you'll have time to practice the talk in your groups, but first I'm going to go through just the talk, so listen and pay attention to the keynotes. And also note that this laser talk assumes that you're talking to a member of the House. Here we go. According to the CFED, 44% of American households don't have enough savings to stay out of poverty for more than 3 months if they lose their income. That means that millions of Americans are just one job loss or one medical crisis away from financial disaster. The Financial Security Credit uses tax time to help people build emergency savings. Low-income taxpayers could choose to deposit all or part of their tax refund into an eligible savings product by simply checking a box on their tax return. And to encourage their participation, after 8 months, they would get a 50-cent match for every dollar they save, up to $500 per year. A similar pilot program called Save USA has shown that this idea works. Will you co-sponsor H.R. 2917, the Financial Security Tax? Financial Security Credit Act of 2013, and speak with House Ways and Means leaders about including the Financial Security Credit in upcoming tax legislation? Now I'm going to go through it again, but this time I'm going to leave out some of the key facts, and when I get to those blanks, just shout out the answer in your group. So I'll leave a blank, and so I'm going to say it, and then shout out the answer in your group. According to the CFED, what percent of American households don't have enough savings to stay out of poverty for 3 months if they lose their income? This means that millions of Americans are just one job loss or one medical crisis away from what? The Financial Security Credit uses what time to help people create emergency savings? Low-income taxpayers could choose to deposit all or part of their tax refund in an eligible savings product by doing what? And to encourage their participation, after 8 months, they would get how much of a match? A similar pilot program called What has shown that this idea works. Will you co-sponsor H.R. 2917, the What Act? And speak with leaders of what committee about including the Financial Security Credit in upcoming tax legislation? Okay, great. Now I'm going to go through it a third time, and I'll leave the blanks again, but this time please don't shout out the answer. Instead, just think the answer silently in your head, and then I will give it to you. And this will help you internalize the facts. So here we go. According to the CFED, what percent of American households don't have enough savings to stay out of poverty for 3 months if they lose their income? 44%. This means that millions of Americans are just one job loss or one medical crisis away from what? Financial disaster. The Financial Security Credit uses what time to help people create emergency savings? Tax time. Low-income taxpayers could choose to deposit all or part of their tax refund into an eligible savings product by doing what? Simply by checking a box on their tax return. And to encourage their participation, after 8 months, they would get how much of a match? 50 cents for every dollar that they save, up to $500 per year. A similar pilot program called WHAT has shown that this idea works. Save America. Will you co-sponsor H.R. 2917, the WHAT Act? The Financial Security Credit Act of 2013, and speak with leaders of WHAT committee about including the Financial Security Credit in upcoming tax legislation. The House Ways and Means Committee leaders. Think you've got it? Okay, let's see. We're going to go silent for 2 minutes, and we ask that one person in your group volunteer to do the laser talk for your group right now. So don't be shy. This is a great practice, and we urge you to do it without looking at the call slides. We then encourage you all to practice this laser talk right after today's call. Okay, go.
Okay, folks, and Anita, thanks so much for doing a great job on the training and for all your great work out in Southern California. So, folks, we hope you found this exercise helpful, and not only will it help you with writing your letters this month, remember that Congress is on reset the week of March the 17th, and so this later talk is great for face-to-face meetings and town hall appearances. So if you haven't scheduled a meeting for the March recess, be sure to contact your House and Senate schedulers to get something on their schedule. And be sure to ask about town halls and public events during that week as well. And once you do get a meeting, please contact Meredith or me as soon as possible to help you prepare. And we have the laser talk on the website under U.S. Poverty Action News page, and I'll include a link to it in the summary as well as the weekly update. So now let me go to St. Louis and Cindy Chang 11, who will do our share section and a fundraising update. Cindy, you there?
Yeah, thanks, Josh. Hi, this is Cindy Chang 11, fundraising associate for Results. I get to facilitate our share section on this month's call and then give you a brief fundraising update. First, we want to hear from Lucinda Winslow in Stamford, Connecticut, and about her and her husband's amazing media successes over the last 3 weeks and how they did it. Are you there, Lucinda?
Yeah, can you hear me?
You bet. Go ahead.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm honored to be here with everybody and especially the Circles people. I'm very moved. So last month's op-ed challenge cracked a glass ceiling open for both my husband Bill Baker and me. In the past 3 weeks, together we've had 5 op-eds and 1 letter to the editor published in Connecticut Papers and in Spirit of Change magazine, New England's largest holistic health publication. And we're pretty amazed. And no, if we can do this, you sure can too. I'm thinking that the key was stretching beyond comfort. First, Last summer, we went to the international conference, and actually tasting the energy and importance of what results and all of us are doing together and the empowerment of being heard by our members of Congress, this was huge. Also, reading. I'm not naturally a news freak, but now I try to make a habit of reading the newspapers, the results website, and everything else I can. We also use a team approach. As part of Coastal Connecticut results, we meet twice a month to discuss both domestic and global issues and knock around ideas, actions, and strategies like an editorial board. Bill and I drill into our local paper, the New York Times, and state papers to look for hooks and angles. And we also bounce ideas off of Joss Lynn. He's a world-class hookmeister. Use him. We also widen our target so as not to overload our local paper. We write to papers in the other four Connecticut congressional districts on each of the results focuses. We have the Hartford Current still to go on EITC. We ask, where else can we write? We start off with the tried and true. Bill and I are often learning the issues as we go. So our first drafts usually borrow heavily from others, from you and your great letters online, from results information, from Joss's sample pieces. And then by letting the piece rest and ferment, my own angle and feelings emerge, and what I send is actually mine. Also, Joss is a great editor, a terrific safety net. And back to stretching, I wouldn't be honest if I said this is comfortable for me yet. When I heard the op-ed challenge, I said, oh, sure, Bill can do it. And an alarm went off, and I got curious as to what was up. I heard all the inner familiar culprits, who am I, I'm not nationally known, they won't like me, voices that have forever kept me small, invisible, and safe. I'm sure you have your own versions. I knew I had a choice, and that one of the things we're doing together is moving beyond what stops us to step up on behalf of the big issues that really count. So I wrote the op-ed, and though my hand was sweating when I pressed send, I did it. Trembling, I followed up by voice message and kept going. And the truth is, many editors are actually open and interested. They're looking for items that are timely, well-written, and important. Each time we speak out, show up, we break barriers not only in ourselves, but for each other, and make a difference as we work together to end poverty. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lucinda. I like the idea of Joss.
Yeah, is it? Hello.
I think Cindy might have been so blown away by that great chair, Lucinda, that she somehow disconnected herself. Cindy, are you on the line with us? All right. I'll just jump in and introduce Janice. Janice, are you there from Whitefish, Montana?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Why don't you just go ahead and share your recent success there?
Okay, hi everyone. I'm very pleased and happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me, Joss. I'm a member of the results group in the middle of nowhere, Northwest Montana. And my group has been trying for some time, several months now, to try to get face-to-face meetings with some of our representatives. But Montana is such a huge state geographically that they don't very often get to our little corner of the world, and getting to where they are usually involves, you know, a day-long drive. So when we had our regular monthly meeting on Thursday, on a Thursday evening in February last month, one of our members announced that she had just heard that both of our senators were going to be appearing that next that Saturday, 2 days later, in the town next to where we live. So this was thrilling news to us. We thought, here's an opportunity to try to snagged two at once, so we three of us braved a snowstorm and drove to Kalispell, Montana for a 8 a.m. breakfast meeting at our local VFW, where we were fortunate to get to meet both Senator Tester and our brand newly appointed Senator John Walsh, who has just been appointed by our governor to fill the seat of Max Baucus, who was our senior senator in the Senate for 39 years, just been appointed ambassador to China. So it was an informal get-together at our VFW. We got there, and there was coffee and breakfast stuff, and the three of us went over and first saw Senator Walsh. We introduced ourselves as results volunteers explained a little bit about what results did and congratulated him on his appointment. And we dove right in. We figured we'd just have a few minutes. There was quite a good crowd there for a Saturday morning. And we told Senator Walsh that we were concerned about poverty in America, hoped he would do all he could to support SNAP and the EITC and the CTC. Since he's brand new, we really didn't know much about him, and we're really trying to feel out what his position was. But we were thrilled to hear him immediately respond that his wife had been a teacher for many years, and that through her he knew firsthand that many, many students miss meals on the days they're not in school. Senator Walsh said that he was very supportive of cutting the deficit, but he said that we can't do it on the backs of our most vulnerable citizens. And this was without our prompting. This was him just speaking off the cuff. So we were very, very happy to hear that. Senator Walsh has been in the military for 33 years, and yet he believes that there's a lot of waste in the military and that the cuts could be made to that budget without sacrificing national security, which money could be used to help make sure that our vulnerable citizens are fed. So we were very, very pleased to hear that. We then pushed our way over to where Senator Tester was and introduced ourselves again and told him about results. We thanked him for his support of SNAP and for signing on to the letter opposing additional cuts to SNAP. And Senator Tester, who is a very plain-spoken, direct individual, told us that he was very disappointed that there had been any cuts made to SNAP, but given the package with the farm bill, at least he was pleased that the end result was a whole lot more preferable than the $40 billion cuts that had been proposed in the House. And he commented that all the crazies back there in Washington just don't get it, how important it is to take care of our citizens in poverty. We were able to specifically reference and tell him about the Financial Security Credit Act and the House Bill 2917. He had not heard about it, but seems very, very interested and asked us to follow up with his office about it. So we did give him one of results, leave behind sheets. And then in the next few days, we did follow up and sent further information and to his tax aide and also sent additional information to Senator Walsh. He's brand new, so his staff isn't even set up yet, but we were able to email him some of the information, thank them for taking the time to speak with us and follow up that way. And we have it calendared to, in another couple of weeks, follow up again and ask if they have any questions or if there's anything we can do to help provide additional information. So overall, it was a very fortunate event that we had heard about this at the last minute and were able to go, and we were very pleased with the tenor of the comments by both our senators and are excited to have had an opportunity for face-to-face communication, and we hope that this will open up a door to further encouraging communications with them.
Thank you. Great. Thank you very much. Now I'd like to do a brief fundraising update, and instead of having a volunteer share about a fundraiser, today I'm going to share my own experience with you about a house party I hosted at my home in St. Louis last week. And I did that to test drive some brand new resources we've developed to help you host an Everyday Heroes fundraising event with an outreach theme. A little background, I am a fundraising coach on staff at Results, but I'm also a volunteer. You may not know that I just moved to St. Louis this year, so my personal connections for outreach and fundraising were really starting from scratch. But I'm determined to start a Results Global group here on March 30th to complement our Results Domestic group. And as part of that strategy, I invited not only the St. Louis domestic team, but everyone I've met so far who's coming here to come to Results Fundraiser. Because, see, an invitation to a, quote, celebration of everyday heroes party sounds more fun and less intimidating than a, quote, results group start meeting sometimes. I admit that inviting strangers isn't comfortable for me, but magic can happen even when you get a no. For instance, the no's on my list actually turned into two invitations to speak to classrooms, two invitations to speak to a social justice team, and four donations from brand new donors. So inviting for a fundraiser is a great excuse for outreach conversations. But about the event,
20 people arrived, and when I gathered guests together, I framed a program to set people at ease, telling them, I'm really excited to tell you about Results, an organization I'm passionate about, and by inviting you here, I'm sharing this piece of myself with you so that we can get to know each other better, and I can invite you to be a part of it too. So a short 20-minute program included my story of what Results means to me, a showing of the Results Everyday Heroes video, and my invitation to engage with us by donating or helping Results to make connections for the group start. Throughout the party and my talk, I ran a slideshow on the wall. You can see that on the slide there with my partners all dressed up in, it's really you, it's at the international conference, dressed up in hero costumes with holding signs with reasons why you advocate. So far we've raised $2,200, which is about the cost of supporting two Results groups. And that's exactly what we're going to have here in St. Louis. But I'm telling you, by using the Everyday Heroes language and asking for people to help make connections and start a group, it changed the whole tone of the event to be more collaborative. I've never had so many people come up to me after the talk saying things like, I want to hear more about this and how you can partner with my nonprofit, or I own a store. How about a day when 15% of the profits go to Results? Or I even heard, my company is interested in this kind of work. Do you have a corporate sponsor yet? So I hope this story has your imaginations turning about how an Everyday Hero-themed fundraiser can help you reach your outreach goals. We're finalizing a resource for you called the Fundraiser to Go. It's a mailed kit of resources on a flash drive with great tools for you to use, including sample fundraiser shares from partners, including mine from this event. It'll have the Everyday Heroes video and other videos to use, that slideshow of the Results partners in superhero costumes, Everyday Hero-themed invitation templates, sample emails for invitations and follow-up, even ideas for appetizers. So we'll be sending these out to groups who regularly throw house parties. But please contact me at clevin@results.org if you would like to receive a Fundraiser to Go resource kit to host your own celebration of Everyday Heroes when these become available soon. And I believe that we are heading toward some final announcements.
Yep. Yeah, so hello, everyone. Christy Martino, are you on the line?
I am. Hello, everyone. My name is Christy Martino. I've just joined Results as a domestic grassroots organizer. I'll be working on developing groups in the Northeast, New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont, and in the South. And just before I get to the announcements, thank you all for the wonderful, meaningful work you do. I'm so proud to be a part of this organization, really. Okay, on to announcements. Here are just a few outreach events Results U.S. Poverty staff will be involved with in the coming weeks. Joss will be doing a Results Group Start meeting in Iowa City, Iowa. On March 23rd, Meredith Dotson will be presenting at Ecumenical Advocacy Days in Washington, D.C., and Myrdan Thompson will be in Memphis, Tennessee to work on starting a new group there. Results will be hosting a Group Start meeting in Gig Harbor, Washington, and on April 4th through the 6th, Meredith and I will be doing outreach in New Hampshire and Maine. You can contact me for more details, kmartino@results.org. And please remember to send Joss your 2014 group plans. There are just a few plans left to be submitted, so please send them directly to jlynn@results.org today. And if you know someone who might make a great Results advocate, please invite them to a Results introductory call on Wednesday, March 12th at 9 p.m. Eastern. If you want support in getting media published, join the next Results media support call on Tuesday, March 18th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And the Results U.S. Poverty Free Agents calls will be meeting on Tuesday, March 18th at 1 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget to register for the 2014 Results International Conference. You have 1 month left to get the early bird registration discount, and you can find conference information and registration link on our International Conference page under the Events tab on the Results homepage. And if you know people 18 to 28 years old, please encourage them to apply for the Real Change Fellowship. Applications for that are due by March 21st. You can find more about Real Change on our International Conference page. And you can find a full list of upcoming events along with call-in numbers and registration links on the Results Events calendar. Thank you all so much for being on the call today. The next Results U.S. Poverty National Conference call is Saturday, April 12th at 12:30 p.m. Eastern. Operator, please open up the phone line so we can all help start a fire about the financial security credit by wishing each other a happy Bunsen Burner Day.
Okay. Happy Bunsen Burner Day. Happy Bunsen Burner Day. It's March 31st.
Come on, baby, light my fire.
Have a good day out there. really bizarre. Minnesota people, don't hang up. I'm going to disconnect the call and talk for a minute. Be right with you.
Happy Bunsen Burner Day. Bye.
Are you there?
Thank you for listening to my first call. It was fantastic. This is Catherine Luria from Big Harbor.
Obviously, this is not. This is the.
Back to the other line.
Hang on. Are you still there, Minnesota?
I am.
Okay, great. And are you there, Nancy?
Connecticut here, too.
Oh, very good. Okay, great. And Rich, are you there?